You are about to listen to Domain Cleveland's podcast. Thanks for tuning in at domainseattle.com.
Our salty nuts. Nuts.
Salty nuts.
Salty nuts.
Which, the heat and humidity isn't real hard to have.
Luckily for you, I like salty nuts.
I gotta push this at all, Bill?
No, it's good. It's good.
Am I recording?
You guys are going.
All right. Hi, this is Tim with Domain or DCLE Radio.
What's
with
up,
Eddie
Tim?
From Suicide Silence.
That's me.
We're at Rock on the Range. It's really loud, and that's the way we fucking like it.
If it ain't loud, it's not worth listening to, man.
All right, man. So tell us about your new CD.
This thing right here, this our self-titled CD, Suicide Silence. Probably the most hated CD right now.
Oh, no.
Yeah, man. Like, it's notorious right now, man.
Cool.
But that's how we wanted it.
That's
It's a record that we, as a band, stepped out of our comfort zone and really kind of pushed the artistic envelope for ourselves. You know, yeah. We're known as a extreme death metal band. No singing, hardly any melody. The only melodies that are in there are usually in bridges. You know, our verses, our choruses are all very heavy, very punishing. We invoke mayhem and violence live in a good way.
Right.
Positive releases, if you will. But at the end of the day, our fan base is accustomed to listening to that.
Yeah.
And we, for this record, we wrote somber numbers. We wrote numbers that, you know, are a little bit more experimental, you know, doing non-choruses, doing really open, broad, silent parts, you know, before we slam into a piece. You know, writing songs with timeless aspects to them, clean vocals, melodic vocals.
Right. So almost more traditional songwriting style versus your.
I would say though. I mean, we've always kind of maintained, you know, kind of a rock and roll structure of songs. You know, we write music that has verse choruses. It's just heavy, you know.
Yeah.
So we do stick to traditional writing styles. This one we kind of went with the more old school approach. You know, we recorded the record live. We recorded drums onto tape, and yeah, we went far into big
drum room.
Big drum room sound. Small drum room.
Yeah.
We actually were all in the drum room recording the scratch. Yeah. Scratch takes together, yeah, I mean, it felt nice to feel like a rock and roll band again, you know, like to step out of, you know, the very monotonous and very sterile way of recording where, you know, you record a part and then you go and you clean it up and you clean it up and you clean it up and you clean it up, to where when you get something that's very nice and polished, but the heart's taken out.
Right.
That's what we wanted to put into this record.
Overdub. Yeah. Hey, missed that two notes in that one little spot.
Exactly.
Let's clean that up.
So it's like, this was more like, I don't know, glorifying the mistakes.
Okay.
You know, saying, you know, that this was a mistake and it's meant to be there. Let's leave it. You know, picking the vocal takes that aren't my favorite, you know, like, because there's passion in the vocal. It makes the record have its own embodiment and its own life. And I'm really proud of it, man. I'm really proud of this piece. I'm really proud of my band for stepping out of the zone and being fearless.
Was some of the writing changes too, not to beleaguer any kind of negative things, but with the tragedies that happened? I mean, is that where you wanted to change focus, or did that have any kind of influence on,
you know, yeah,
writing the new record?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things we said to ourselves was, hey, man, life could be gone tomorrow. Let's write the record that we're going to be extremely happy with. Let's write the record that if we were to be just erased off this earth for whatever reason, that's the record that I'm going to be the most proud of. And 100%, man, that's what we did. We set out to do that, and we did it. Knowing full and well that it was going to receive backlash. Knowing full and well that it was going to make us look weaker in the eyes of the industry. Because, I mean, numbers is the game, you know?
Yeah,
money is what keeps bands relevant. And if you're bringing in money for the agencies, for the record labels, for the touring agencies, if you're bringing in money for them, they support you. If you're not, you look weak to them. And right now, that's what we were 100% unafraid of. We weren't scared of looking
okay, so I have
any kind of way. You're fine.
So I guess my thing is, from an outside point of view, if you change direction a little bit, you said you're going to more melodic, more, don't you feel that, shouldn't it be a felt that, yeah, maybe your hardcore people aren't going to be super happy with it, but maybe that opens up a door for new people to come in, experience, and then I still think that
this record is too heavy for a lot of the pop culture.
Yeah.
It's a very heavy record, just because
it
involves.
Would you consider this your black album?
I mean, in a way, it's our black album. In our way, this is our rubber soul. You know,
yeah.
Like when the Beatles went experimental. That's all it was. They were already known for writing pop music, and writing really good pop music. So they just wanted to trip out a little bit, man. Like, being themselves, explore their psyche, explore their who they are as people, and write the music that comes from you. And when they wrote Rubber Soul, their fans hated it. Man, their fans absolutely hated it. And that's where we're at. Unlike Metallica, where, you know, they had more of an immediate response to you know, their core base, they hated it. But, you know, with the Black Album, there was still a huge, huge resurgence. And we know that that's not going to come right away. We know that this record's going to take a long time for people to soak it in and experience it.
Do you feel that that's going to be a direction that you continue in, or do you think every record's going to be its own life?
You know, it's kind of too soon to say. The record's only been out 4 months.
Yeah.
It really hasn't had a chance to bloom yet. It's still very much in its infancy, and I'm just excited to see that. I'd be taking it for granted if I was already thinking about the next one, to be real with you. There is a part of me that goes, you know, this is where I would like to reside and sit here. We just never know. Until we get into the room and start jamming together, that's what's going to dictate how the record goes, what the record does.
Getting at some technical questions.
Sure.
Tuning wise, do you do a lot of the drops, or do you still stay in standards?
That's a better question for our guitarists.
Yeah.
I believe we are in drop A on this record. I'm not 100% sure though. I'm sorry that I can't answer that.
Cool. So I play a little bit, and I get into. I like the recording aspect of it and the technical aspect of it. So I usually ask about, like, gear, tunings, that kind of crazy stuff, because it's interesting to me to hear the process of the A to the B to the C and the final thing, you know, where we get to hear what you put your heart and soul into and your pride and blood, sweat, and tears and stuff. And,
we went completely old school with this record. We were using a 1970s Marshall head. Our guitarist Mark was using some 5150 or a triple rectifier, Mesa Boogie.
Yeah.
It was from the 90s. For whatever reason, the feeling and the vibe was just, we wanted that like old school crunch to our
right.
to our sound, mixed with our little adjustments to still bring that heavy. I mean, the record still like crushes. Like when those guys hit those guitars, man, they bring some fire behind it, man. Can't help it, man. We're a heavy band. We're an extreme band.
It's awesome. It's really cool. I like the fact that you kind of went back and used some of the older stuff.
Yep. There was no process effects. Everything was out of legit pedal boxes, old school pedal boxes. Ross was breaking out all these different pedals, and it was just blowing us away, man. We're like, he'd tell us a story. Check out this one. And he was using some pedal that he got in the 60s. It was some tremolo.
Yeah.
Some tremolo pedal. I mean, like I said, I'm not a guitarist, so I can't go
okay.
further into that.
So
but.
as a singer, then.
It was interesting as a singer.
Mic-wise, any preferences?
I use Sennheiser, and I'm really partial to oh God, I'm blanking on the name right now. I use Sennheiser Live.
Yeah.
And then in the studio this last time, we used a 1944 Telefunken.
Oh, really?
The thing had to warm up for 20 minutes before we could use it.
Built-in tube.
Not only the tube, but it had a it had like a box, like a power supply that you had to turn on. It was intense, man.
Cool.
Yeah, dude, it was really cool, and it was also a microphone that had been used by, like, I don't know, Jonathan Davis sang into it, Corey Taylor sang into it, Chito Moreno, Nick Cave
totally
sang into that microphone.
Nick Cave.
Yeah, Tom Waits sang into that microphone. So it was one of those things where it's like I just kind of felt the presence of all these great singers
behind
me.
And can you hear too the difference how your voice comes through on something like that versus even your newer sends?
Yeah, I mean, it was one of those things where I didn't want to pay too much attention to the microphone because I didn't want to think about what it sounded like. I was just kind of letting free flow happen. And listening back, man, I got some of the gnarliest screams I've ever heard myself do on this record, and the grittiness, the diaphragm, the fact that it just has this old school soul to it. I mean, it has a soul, this microphone. So hearing myself out of it, it's almost like it's not me. It's somebody else.
Yes. And the nice thing too with the tube thing. There we are.
Yeah, I think we're still
on.
Is this live right now? Are we live right now?
Are we live? Okay. I think we're still broadcasting. Yeah, we're still broadcasting.
Hell yeah.
Cool. Too, with the tube and the older school stuff, it likes the push.
Yes.
You know?
It
so
reacts.
You push it
to that push.
Push it, and it just gets fatter and warmer.
You know, the sad thing is we had so much fun with all the technical aspects of this recording. And our fans just sat and they bitched about it because it's not what they're used to. You know, what they're used to is a really clean, polished sound, and that's fine. That's great. You know, like, that's how bands record nowadays because we don't have the money to record on tape anymore. But really, the passion and the ingenuity comes from just going in and jamming. And the way you record a band jamming is the old school way. You can't really do it with the new school sound.
Do you do lyrics first, or do you do music and then write, and then the lyrics come after? Or?
Music comes first, and then I start to write lyrics. Yeah. Always, yeah. Like, I find that it puts me more in tune with the band. If I just write lyrics and try to fit them to music, I feel like it detaches the musician a little bit.
That's cool. I appreciate your time, man.
Hey, man,
awesome.
Thank you, man.
Thanks for
I appreciate
meeting.
It.
Have a good day.
Yeah, man. Thank
Stay
you.
Stay dry.
You
buy their record.
Go and check it out.
Get it.
Don't listen
wherever.
To the haters.
Or listen to them. I don't give a fuck.
Thanks, Eddie. Appreciate it.
Of course, man. Thank you. Peace out, y'all.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Much appreciated.
I stopped the recording. How was that?
Good, man. I mean, I took some pictures of it.
You have just listened to Domain Cleveland. Thanks for tuning in at domainseattle.com. Please subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcast and Google Music.